is a pretty dark episode for Christmas.
Thanks, Phil Spector. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, David, you got to cut just that section out. And put that as the cold open of the episode. this is a pretty dark episode, huh?
This is a pretty dark episode for Christmas.
Thanks, Phil Spector. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, David, you got to cut just that section out and put that as the cold open of the episode. this is a pretty dark episode, huh? Hey, it's Brandon.
And I'm David. Welcome to Late to the Party, a podcast where we investigate and break down the 1001 albums you must hear before you die, the 2016 edition edited by Robert Dimery.
You're so lucky. 2020 is unbelievably, actually, mercifully almost over. And I finally polished off my Thanksgiving leftovers, which means it's Christmas time, baby. Not even 2020 can ruin my Christmas joy. Well, I'm really fucked right now.
It reminds me of that Merle Haggard song, "If We Make It Through December." That's kind of where. That's kind of where. That's a Christmas song. That's kind of where we're at.
Every week. What are we doing every week, David?
Well, we're listening to an album from the list, and then we're gonna break it down. Why it's worth a listen, a purchase, or a pass.
This week, we're diving into Phil Spector's Holiday Spectacular number 37, A Christmas Gift for You. And an early Merry Christmas to you, David. It's, you know, a month away.
I'm notoriously maybe, December 1st is when I can begin doing Christmas. Like, I let Thanksgiving
What are you going to do to it?
I'm just saying, I let Thanksgiving have its own weekend. That's Thanksgiving weekend. I don't start the Christmas season until, like, even thinking about it or getting trees or decorations until December.
We're getting a tree today.
This year, we got not one tree, but we got two trees this year.
Oh, Daddy Warbucks over here.
We got a little, I accidentally bought a tiny little Charlie Brown tree that is actually already dead. So I think in the day that we've had it, we've lost about, 40% of the needles. But the water dish below is just like filled to the brim with needles. It's pretty gross.
You should have recorded it. It could have been an art house film.
Yeah. Well,
Kirk would have been proud from Gilmore Girls.
So we have two Christmas. I put up the lights already before Thanksgiving. Katie has decorated a lot of the house with all of our Christmas decorations. So, I mean, we've already watched a Christmas movie. We watched Elf already. It's for all intents and purposes. It started at our household. How about you?
You should. Oh gosh. Well, yeah. So you had a great Thanksgiving. Sounds like, right? Sounds like you've been in the Christmas spirit, which is good. We've been watching a lot of holiday movies as well. I know that when our special guests arrive, we'll talk more about favorites. But I would definitely recommend Happiest Season. I think it is on Hulu. Brayden liked that as well. What else have we watched? I'm sure he'll remind me because he's got a much better memory than I do of all the holiday movies we've been watching, but it's been a good time. We cooked a massive feast for two people, just the two of us. It was ridiculous. So much fun. Go ahead.
All the recipes are for like 6 to 8 people, right? And then instead of doing math, just follow the recipe as is.
And we had conversations about, you know, like splitting recipes or making it smaller. But I don't really do math very well, and I cook worse than I do math. So it was really just a better idea to trail forward. But otherwise, yeah, things have been good. I've been listening unabashedly so to a shit ton of Christmas music, and not even. I haven't been judicious in my listening. It's just, yeah, that's a Christmas song. I don't even like Feliz Navidad. It may be my least favorite Christmas song of all time. I'll listen to it. Whoa. Yeah, hot take number one in this special extended episode of Late to the Party. We never actually welcomed our guests, by the way. That's rude. Welcome, everybody. Good to see you again, Ireland.
Ireland back in it, and also Brazil, like one of our most loyal international listeners.
I thought they put us down.
Yeah, I know.
Welcome back, Brazil. What have you been listening to, David?
Well, again, so much Christmas music, which is, I think part of it is motivated by this show, but also just because. And Christmas, I don't know. We can wait for our guests to as a larger conversation. But are you a Christmas album person or are you a Christmas playlist person?
It depends on when I'm listening and how I'm listening. So if I'm in the car and I'm not feeling like thinking, I'll just throw on, 102.5 in St. Louis that just has been playing Christmas music for 10 days now, which is maybe against the law. But that's just, I'll listen to whatever's on, typically. If we're in the house, we tend to listen to albums. Ella and Louis, Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong are favorites. Several tracks from the album we'll be talking about today are favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And then other scatterings.
I recently found that I didn't realize that Pitchfork has its own like a bunch of playlists on Apple Music or Spotify or any of those.
Don't you know so by now that Pitchfork has a list for everything?
Yeah, but I didn't know it was like a playlist ready for me to add to my library that I can do, right? So they have the 50 best holiday songs of all time, and there's some ones on here that I did not know, like highlights on there. Besides like a lot of the usual, you would say best ever. Two from this album, or three from this album that we're talking about today. Three of the 50. But also a forgotten one, The Kinks' Father Christmas, which is a really funny song.
I don't know that song.
That is a funny song. It's about like him dressing up as Santa and getting mugged by people on the street that say, like, give me money, don't give me presents. It's pretty good.
Ray and Dave Davies.
Yeah. It's really, it's a good song. And then Curtis Blow does Christmas Rapping, which is pretty good. And then Silver Bells by the Flaming Lips. Those are some highlights from that list that I thought were worth listening to.
Flaming Lips.
But yeah, I love, they're funny, man.
I once saw the Flaming Lips from afar by accident because the National were late for a show. And so
were they in the bubbles?
Yeah, they were. And Wayne Coyne said, hey, you get 45 minutes more music because the National are late. And I was pretty sure he had no idea where he was.
I saw them in Brooklyn playing for a little bit. Yeah, but I was really far away and they were rolling around in the balls. And what?
Okay. David, do you think the people at home know how special this episode is?
Well, it's Christmas episode, so automatically there's that. But to the extent of it, no.
Yeah, the partners are here.
Yes.
The adults are in the room.
And others, the better halves. Are here.
So I think maybe we should take a break, quick break, come back, do a little context, a little world building, and then afterwards we'll bring in the, as I said before, the adults. I also gotta get more coffee. This is really just an excuse for me to caffeinate. We'll be right back, folks. Thanks for being with us. Welcome back to Late to the Party, folks. That was White Christmas on our album of the week. I say week like we do this every week. Our featured album for this episode, A Christmas Gift for You. Before we get to our esteemed guest, who I am so excited to bring into the show, David's going to talk to us a little bit about historical context and why we should give a damn about this album. David, take it away.
Well, okay, so this album was a Phil Spector baby. Like he loved Christmas so much. As you said, like he's born on Boxing Day. I guess like that all, those kids that
also David's favorite holiday.
Their birthdays on Christmas and they get extra presents, but they don't really get extra presents, but the parents always say that, oh no, they're your birthday present. Like, no, they're not. But anyway, so Phil Spector really loves this. And he wants to make a Christmas album that charts like number one going into the Christmas season. So he gets together a bunch of the Motown acts that he's worked with, the Ronettes, the Crystals, and decides that, I guess they're recording this from like September to October in Los Angeles, I think, like in the summer, practically, this Christmas album, to release on November 22nd, 1963, which is a date, history buffs, that sounds very familiar. Or if you just read Stephen King's novel of the same name.
You do that.
It's the same day that John F. Kennedy was assassinated. So you're like, because some people I think still have not maybe heard of this album at all and didn't realize, like, oh, I've never heard of this. Like, did it sell? I've heard the songs, but maybe not this album. Because it didn't do very well. Phil Spector, out of respect, it is said he pulled it from shelves. So it really just like commercially tanked. It was re-released several times to great success. Mm-hmm. I think like in the 70s, like 73, Phil Spector did it differently. It's been on a bunch of labels that keep reissuing. A lot of even things that weren't released as singles are still charting the billboards today. Like they're still pretty popular. So if you don't know Phil Spector, he's one of the most famous music producers of all time. He's up there, yeah, like, you know, one of the best. His wall of sound that he invented or established, became, you know, practically as, you know, it changed the way that popular music was listened to and recorded.
And he's nutty as a fruitcake.
He's nutty, yeah, he's currently rotting in prison for murder. So
literally rotting. And the newest photos are not kind.
Yeah, and I also hear like don't watch the Al Pacino, and who was the lawyer in that Al Pacino, and
I have no idea. Somebody, I think I've seen somebody it, really though. Famous.
What's her face that did Prime Suspect? What's her name?
I don't remember.
Helen Mirren. So they did it. Yeah, so they're in it, and it's
she also did Caligula.
Like, oof. But it's supposed to be like about the trial and supposed to make it look like they're like having a thing while he's on trial for murder. And it's supposed to be really bad and trying to like be overly sympathetic towards this crazy, terrible human being.
But before he was a murderous human.
Brandon, you want to, I think we've thrown them around the wall sound a bunch, especially with our last album, but maybe we didn't clearly define it for our audience.
Do I what? Yahoo?
Do you have a very clear? Do you Yahoo? What year is this?
It's the same year where Ask Jeeves is still relevant.
2003. Yeah. Yes.
So we're talking the same year that Arcade Fire's funeral came out. See, now we're
back to the show. Full circle.
So what's the wall of sound? Well, the wall of sound really refers both to the physical environment of the recording and to the sound that's generated from those assembled musicians that we'll talk about in a couple minutes. But the wall itself, the walls where these sessions take place, they're housed in Gold Star Studios in Los Angeles, which is about the size of my apartment. And it's special because it actually has wall-to-wall ceramic tiles, which does something to the sound. So Spector would cram 15 to 20 or 40, depending on the session or the album, musicians into a very small space, and you would have sound literally bouncing off the walls. So you'd have these musicians who would be, they'd have bleeding into each other's mics, right? So each sound would bleed into another mic, and you end up having these swirling, bleeding, bouncing sounds on these ceramic tiles. And you, when you add in the proximity of everyone who is playing live together, including the singers, you have this massive pop orchestra that sounds like a freight train just barreling right at you. So if you think about a song like You've Lost That Loving Feeling, where it does feel like there's an actual barrier of sound that you cannot, that is impregnable. That's the wall of sound. It's this massive rush. And it has more to do with the integrity or the quality of the song than sometimes the vocals or the lyrical content does. In fact, Spector is quoted as saying, "We wanted a sound that was so strong and powerful that even if the song couldn't hold up, the sound would carry the song through." So the sound here is meant to be just as important as the contributions of the vocalists or the producer, in this case, Phil Spector, or the songwriters. So that's the wall of sound. What's more interesting to me is how we get that wall of sound. And here's what I really love about our podcast, besides the fact that I get to hang out with people I love so much. We get to nerd out on these connections, these sort of fabrics, especially the mid-20th century pop rock recording world, all of these connections and fabrics that most people don't have the time or inclination to explore. So on this album, we've got all these different artists, right? We've got the Crystals. We got the Ronettes featuring Ronnie Spector. What's her maiden name at that time, David?
Bennett.
Ronnie Bennett, soon to be Ronnie Spector. Bennett.
I don't know why I pronounce it Bennett. It's probably Bennett. I think in my brain I was like Bennett, but then I was like Bennett.
Why are you making this harder on yourself? Lisa Bennett, right? But anyway, you've got all these groups. You got Darlene Love, and my favorite in name only, Bob B. Sox and the Blue Jeans, right?
Pretty good.
But the Crystals on this album and many others, they aren't even the Crystals, right? Like most of the vocals are ghost recorded by Darlene Love and her group, The Blossoms. And the Crystals couldn't even hit the same notes that Darlene Love and The Blossoms were hitting. And we thank so much for 20 Feet from Stardom, because we watched that last night. It reminded me just how awful some of these ghost recording sessions were. But if we include the Crystals in that, most of these musicians, in fact, none of these groups are playing their own instruments, right? So for the first time in the history of this podcast, we have the privilege of hearing and talking about the same band 2 weeks in a row, and no one knows who they are. So I think, David, that we should probably start tallying the number of times that we feature albums that were primarily recorded by the Wrecking Crew.
I'm sure a ton
we're
of
up to
spectators.
Two.
Yeah, and we've only done, what, is our 10th episode?
This is our... Ninth episode, 10th if you include the bonus.
Nice.
But anyway, so as a reminder, the Wrecking Crew, group of professional, mostly jazz trained musicians that played on just about every important album from 1958 to 1979.
Right, and then even when they are on it, people are still saying that they are on it instead. Like Brian Wilson is said, because he was famously obsessed with Phil Spector and thought he was the greatest. And I'm probably going to put this at the top of the show, but he was on record multiple times saying that this album is the greatest album of all time.
Which I disagree with.
Everyone would disagree. like that just shows you how, I don't know, infatuated he was with Phil Spector and the Wall of Sound. But he would hang out, he would like force himself to be friends with Phil Spector and like hang out in his recording studios and, you know, play around on instruments whenever there was a need. And often piano, and so he technically played on some of these songs, but Phil Spector also said that he kicked him out because he wasn't
good. But it's understandable why he would want to play with these musicians, because if you look at some of the songs, and I'll name a couple in just a second, but if you look at the variety and the diversity of the musicians that they played with, the vocalists that they played with, you can understand why someone like Brian Wilson, who is a musical savant, would want to be closer to these musicians. So, Strangers in the Night.
Stole them.
Yeah, exactly. Stole them. Strangers in the Night by Sinatra. That's the Wrecking Crew. California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas. That's the Wrecking Crew. And The Beat Goes On by Sonny and Cher. The bassist for the Wrecking Crew, Carol Kaye, who's a total badass, she wrote the goddamn bass line for that song that everybody gushes over. So, David, listen to this.
The first part of The Beat Goes On was like this. When I'm cutting a record, I'm hearing everything that's going on. And I fit the bass line as a framework around the records. You had a one chord tune, and you knew that that wasn't going to make it. So about the third line I came up with was... And the beat goes on. All of a sudden it came together, you know. So I thought, aha.
So that's Carol Kaye explaining how she... I have that. It's Carol Kaye explaining how she wrote the bass line and what Sonny Bono came in with and how she changed it. So everybody's walking around thinking that the former, what is he, like the mayor or the governor or the congressman from California, the weirdo Sonny Bono, thinking that he wrote that bass line was really Carol Kaye, you know? She also wrote the bass line for Mission Impossible, by the way. Like, that's Carol
Kaye.
And she wrote the bass line for the original Cosby Show intro, which is a great intro, even though he's a monster. So, like, these are musicians who have effectively been erased from the musical history that they helped record. And in the spirit of Thanksgiving, I think we should put some respect on their names. So I encourage all of you out there to check out the personnel of any West Coast album from the late 50s to the mid 70s, and you'll see these names. You'll see Hal Blaine, who once recorded 7 straight albums of the year as drummer. Earl
and
Palmer.
Featured on our last, he featured on our last episode.
He did.
Hal
yeah.
Blaine. Yeah.
So you'll see Earl Palmer, who's the other drummer, primary drummer for the Wrecking Crew. You'll see Carole Kaye, who is the bassist. You'll see Tommy Tedesco, who wrote and played lead guitar on the Bonanza theme song. Like that's who these people are. They are firmly entrenched in the history of modern American media.
Bonanza has like 500 episodes. So
yes, it's the longest running TV show of all time, and he wrote the guitar part for it. And then finally, you'll hear Plas Johnson, who played the saxophone on this. Yep, that is the Pink Panther. That is the saxophone part on the Pink Panther. And no one knows who these people are. So together, they created for about 20 years the wall of sound that you've heard on just about every important track from that period of recording history. And that's why this album actually works, by the way. Yes, Phil Spector presents, but he just points in the direction of these musicians.
And that's that's like not saying anything of like Jack Nietzsche, who did all the arrangements, who was who ended up becoming a pretty famous soundtracking composer, movie cinema.
He's also like the arranger for Neil Young's 70s albums. So he goes from
Crazy Horse and all that stuff. Yeah, so I mean, there's so many awesome people on here, not named Phil Spector, and he was kind of a monster during the engineering of this too, like making them record at like all hours of the night. You know, I mean, they put this album out in 2 months. They recorded it, edited it, mastered it, distributed it in 2 months, 3 months, right? Like that's
some say at gunpoint. I'm not sure if this was actually the Phil Spector gun waving period, but
yeah. Yeah, because he's been known to do that. All right. So also context too, like Rolling Stone, as much as you, again, buy into these lists, because we, you know, these lists are people just vote and whoever has it. But anyway, Rolling Stone's 500, the idea, you know, like the idea, like you just like ask a bunch of people in music and they vote on their top, whatever.
Oh, I was like Joe Schmo.
That's how they get these lists. But it's ranked 142 out of the 500 greatest albums of all time.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it is for a Christmas album. That's how good it is. All right, Brandon.
Speaking of impressive, you know who's impressive?
No.
Braden Tobin, Katie Schaefer. Very impressive people. I sound like Donald Trump. Do you know, I feel much more comfortable mocking him now that he is not actually going to be in office anymore.
They're tremendous.
I don't know what that is. I think it's
tremendous guess.
It's a release of fear. Yeah, they're huge, huge guess. Anywho, we should probably take a break and then come back and bring in our guests. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, folks. We'll be right back.
Our cheeks are nice and rosy and comfy and cozy, are we? We'll snuggle up together like the birds off a feather would be.
Welcome back. You just listened to Sleigh Ride by the Ronettes, one of their, four songs on this album?
Yeah, but who's actually singing?
Well, you know, you got to watch the documentaries that you watched, Brandon, to really know the truth.
It's true. The truth is out there.
And only Brandon knows it. Only Brandon's pulling the trigger on that $5.99 rental on Amazon Prime.
$3.99, thank you very much.
that's the standard def, huh? You don't watch them in high def?
I'm a monster. I really am. Well, David, you know who we have with us now.
I do.
I don't. No. Gosh. We are privileged and honored to be joined by Katie Schaefer and Braden Tobin, also known as the people who stomach us. Braden and Katie, thanks for being with us.
Hello.
Hi, everyone.
These are also the people that because I think they're grateful that we have this podcast, because now they can be like, just save it for the podcast.
Oh,
just
I've said that so many times.
I've heard just, that phrase.
Yeah, just save it. Just save it. I'm not Brandon. Just save it for the podcast.
God. So we brought our partners in because they, like us, love Christmas and music. And we thought we'd torture them a little bit by bringing them to the podcast and forcing them to listen to us talk more about things they don't care about. But before we get into our normal categories, we thought we'd do a few warm-up categories, a few Christmas special categories, if you will. And we thought we'd start with favorite Christmas movie. Anybody want to go first?
I have favorite Christmas movies. One we always listen to, or always watch, rather, is The Muppet Christmas Carol. It's my favorite. Oh, everything about it. It's so ridiculous.
So good.
It's so good. The music's great. I just added it to my Christmas playlist. And Gremlins. I love Gremlins at Christmas.
Oh, yeah. I forget about Gremlins.
Never seen Gremlins.
Oh,
what? Oh, my God. So much judgment.
Yeah, it's good.
Brayden, what do you got?
Well, it's funny that Katie said the Muppet Christmas Carol, because I have a funny memory about that, which was that I had oral surgery when I was in second grade, and that was the movie I watched afterwards when I was all drugged up laying in my mom's bed.
Loopy.
That's really all.
Have you seen it since then?
Brayden, who is your favorite Christmas ghost?
Oh, I don't know their
names. What's their names?
Christmas Ghost of the Past and Present.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, which one wears the like, has chains on it?
Yeah, the one that, the Marley and Marley, that guy.
Yeah.
Those guys are awesome. That's my favorite song, too, of the whole, we're Marley and Marley.
Woo!
Katie shakes her head. Things people don't see.
This is a podcast, right?
Sorry. All my disdain to be audible.
You have to verbalize your disapproval.
Heavy sighs. I'm embarrassed that I thought they actually had names. Christmas present.
That's what they're called.
David. Oh, no, Brayden, what's your favorite Christmas movie?
Oh, I put two and then one more after that. The first one was Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation, yes.
I didn't really have much to say about it. I'm just really into ambiance in movies, and I feel like they do that really well. Like, it just, the nostalgia of it all, and just, like, how ridiculous it is. And I often don't like movies that are super, like, raunchy in a way, or just, like, poor taste, kind of. But I feel like it does it really well, and I love it, and I watch it so many times every year.
True.
And Brandon can attest to
we
that.
We bought it. That's how many times we watch it.
Yeah.
No $3.99 rentals
the second
here.
The second one that I put was All I Want for Christmas.
Wait, is that the one?
The 1991 classic with Thora Birch and Lauren Bacall.
That's a really good one. I always forget about that one.
There are other people in it, but they don't matter. And my favorite quote from that movie is, never use the word lovely, darling. It's the mark of a jerk. And that's what Lauren Bacall says to her, I think it's her grandson, when they're at a party and she doesn't like somebody.
Sure is.
And so anytime I hear the word lovely, I think of that. Or like, if I find myself saying it, I kind of like, feel bad and hate myself.
Because Lauren Bacall from 1991 is judging you.
Yes. But that movie's amazing.
It's a pretty good movie.
And then third, for your serious consideration, I propose Daddy's Home 2.
Okay.
The instant classic from 2017.
Christmas.
With John Lithgow, Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell, and Mel Gibson.
Ooh. Whoa.
He's a
it's a Christmas movie?
It's so good, and yes, it is.
I have hilarious. Not seen it. Huh. Well, that is for my consideration. I will consider that.
You won't regret it.
Okay. Do I have to watch the first one to...
That's the best part. You don't.
Don't.
No prereqs. I've
never seen it.
Oh, beautiful. Love it.
Probably won't watch the third one either.
Is there a third one?
I think so.
Is it out?
I feel like I got
for your serious consideration, Daddy's Home 3.
It's probably not a Christmas movie, though.
Probably about Easter or something. Ugh. David, while Braden's doing his side research.
So, I mean, again, Muppets Christmas Carol, Christmas Vacation. I echo that I watch those every year. I laugh out loud to Christmas Vacation every single time I watch it, multiple times. But with that, some good music in that too.
True.
Some really great music tied to some really funny scenes.
I had never seen that movie growing up. I didn't see that movie until like we had been married for I don't know how long.
What's that, Christmas Vacation?
Christmas Vacation, yeah.
Yeah, I saw it when Brayden and I started dating.
Oh my gosh.
It's a Tobin family special. Yeah.
But probably my favorite that I have to watch every single time that I could basically recite and play out for you and would gladly do so for free is Home Alone.
Interesting.
Now, I love that movie. I watched it in theater. When it came out in theaters, I saw it twice, which is unheard of. I never went to the movies more than once for the same movie because why would I do that? I already paid for it. I saw it twice. I was like 8.
Okay, granny.
Well, you know, it's not a thing I did. And then I think it's so funny. I think it's got some great music. Some of my favorite Christmas songs come from or are because of that movie.
Definitive version of White Christmas.
Yes,
we'll get to that later.
That is exactly the Drifters. But other than that, besides that being one of my favorites of all time, is you ever seen this is one of newer favorites. I love horror films. Those are also Christmas. I think those are really great. And Black Christmas is so good. Not the new one. The new one looks like trash. But the original one with Olivia Hussey and Margot Kidder is fantastic. It is terrifying.
What is one of the scariest? Olivia Hussey. Why is that familiar to me?
She was Juliet in the Romeo and Juliet, or 60s, 70s version.
Zeffirelli.
That like 2 years ago, and we never did.
Yeah, eventually we'll get around to it.
It's so good. It's a precursor. Like if you love Halloween, you'll be like, oh. Like John Carpenter called up the guy who made Black Christmas and was like, hey, are you making a sequel to this movie? And he's like, no. And he's like, excellent. And then he goes and makes Halloween.
From the Simpsons.
And then he goes and makes Halloween.
When do I watch it?
Super good.
Mm-hmm. When do the people watch Black Christmas? Do you watch it at Halloween or Christmas?
Well, I think we watched it at Christmas last time.
That was the first time we've seen it.
I can watch a horror movie at Christmas.
I can.
Gremlins. Oh man,
does it like break up the holiday joy for you?
No, there's this
too much.
There's a really good one called, who did we watch? I don't remember what it's called. I'm forgetting now. But a guy like thinks he's Santa Claus. Like he decides he's gonna be Santa Claus. So he spies on the kids in his neighborhood all year round and has a naughty and nice list and like just like binoculars on a rooftop and is like, oh, Timmy's naughty. He punches.
He works in a toy factory.
Yeah, he works at a toy factory. It's so good. And then he goes around and everyone starts getting their comeuppance. it's like he starts giving like coal to the kids that are bad and stuff like that. But then like the adults are really mean to him because he's like kind of going around being a little crazy with his...
He's a perv.
Condemnation of your behaviors, but he starts killing people. It's really good. I can't remember what the name is. It's not Silent Night, Deadly Night. That's a different movie.
I'm gonna look it up.
Well, I feel uplifted.
Anyway, it's super fun. I thought it was great.
But David, it's interesting that you say that Home Alone's your favorite Christmas movie, because for the longest time I thought that my favorite was Home Alone, and it turns out I'm a fucking liar. I get the biggest feelings from Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. So Braden says that Van Jones and I share a love of sentimentality, and I'm honored by the comparison, by the way, because you're totally right. But that movie is drenched in sentimentality, right? And early hot take, is it the perfect movie? You know, it's hysterical. It's got well-timed callbacks to the original, excellent soundtrack, tearful moments by the dozens, and it's so violent. I mean, it's got everything. No, so Home Alone 2 for me is...
The bird lady doesn't do it for me. The scary...
Oh, yeah. Pick on the homeless, David. Real cute.
The scary shoveling old grandpa from the first one, that gets me. That guy, I get that guy. That's a guy I connect to.
What I'm hearing is that you're a sexist and that you don't like the homeless.
Yeah, good. Good. That's the takeaway. Merry fucking Christmas.
Hot take number two.
What do you have against the bird lady?
I don't know. She lives in the roof of that opera house. Like, come on. Like, what is this?
They just go and enjoy a concert together.
But the birds end up being... No, the birds end up being the how he escapes the robbers. The birds. Oh, it's so silly. It's not like... The shovel guy is the shovel. Like, he gets Kevin free from the bad guys with the... Like, that's his thing. That makes sense.
So now you're anti-Alfred Hitchcock.
I'm like, oh, bird seed. And then that gets... And then Harry starts freaking out.
They're different stories.
I didn't realize you were looking for logic in your Home Alone 2 narrative where Kevin gets lost in New York. Never mind the main premise. You're worried about like, how bird did feed.
How did he get on that plane by himself?
The bird scene is amazing.
I agree. I think it's cinematic beauty. And as a film nerd, I thought David might like it.
The sticky bandits are lazy. That's lazy, sticky bandits. The
but
wet
it's
bandits
so pretty.
Is funny.
It's very pretty.
What about New York City?
And
Christmas?
Oh, and that Duncan's toy chest. That place is magical.
Also, Donald Trump is in it, too.
Do you hate New York City, David?
Second home.
The Plaza Hotel. Yeah.
That scary movie that we were talking about that we couldn't name is called Christmas Evil from 1980.
Ooh, Christmas Evil.
And he becomes this killer because of a childhood trauma at Christmas.
Yeah. He sees mommy kissing Santa Claus. And he has like a whole, like his brain just like explodes and he becomes like obsessed with Santa.
I'm pretty sure Braden and I had a conversation about that song and just how traumatic it could be.
Well, they made a horror
movie. They made a movie about it.
That's why.
Mom was unfaithful to dad and now I have to kill everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moving right along in the special holiday show. second and final warm-up category. Favorite Christmas song not on this album?
Got a list.
You can hear Katie uncrinkling the list.
My pages.
Katie, by all means, please.
Just favorite album or favorite song?
Song.
Okay.
Whatever.
Okay.
The Wild West.
Okay, I've got a couple. Okay, my favorite Christmas song is Christmas Wrapping by The Waitresses. It's excellent.
I don't think I've ever heard that song.
Oh,
I you
have.
Have, but you just don't realize who it is.
Isn't it on the radio?
Right now?
Just ever?
I'm not listening to the radio.
Oh, I thought you reached over and I was like, it's cranky.
Wait, does the lead singer sound does she sound like Debbie Harry from Blondie?
Yes.
Oh, then yeah. I've heard it. Yeah, I heard it yesterday.
And then with my family, we on have a song we like scream sing in the car at Christmas. It's actually called something else. It's got like a, you know, parentheses name called For the Children by Barry Manilow. We really like that song.
It's a song I've never heard outside.
Play the song for the listening population. Right here.
The other three people on the Zoom start Googling.
I've never heard that song outside the context of your family ever. And you guys always talk about that song. And it's like, first of all, who listens to Barry Manilow? Secondly,
I do.
For the Children. Then how have you not heard about this song? For the Children.
It's because it's called, it's actually called Because It's Christmas, parentheses, For All the Children.
Because it's Christmas. Now I know exactly what you're talking about.
Great song.
It made me think of that song, Do They Even Know It's Christmas? Oh, yeah. Which is featured in Daddy's Home too, by the way. Let's talk about scream singing.
And then my favorite Christmas album is The Nutcracker. I love The Nutcracker at Christmas. We decorate the tree to The Nutcracker.
Yeah,
pretty classic.
We have different experiences of Christmas.
Braden, care to share your favorite tracks?
Oh, of course. I have three-ish. Bruce Springsteen's versions of Merry Christmas Baby and Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
So good.
And The Jolly Laughing and The Nostalgic Feel.
The saxophone which features on this one, on this album too, a lot. I think that Bruce Springsteen arrangement is the same as the one that's on this album. I think that's really what I read. Yeah, it's the Crystals version, right? It's the same arrangement.
Oh yes, the Crystals, those master musicians.
It does sound similar. And then the second favorite, my other favorite Christmas song is Christmas Through Your Eyes by Gloria Estefan.
I don't think I've heard that one.
I feel like I've heard a lot of Gloria Estefan, so I'm surprised I don't know that one.
So it's a random song that I listened to a lot because my mom had it on like a random Christmas mixtape that she had. And she would just play it, like play that mixtape over and over in the car. And so I just like got used to it. And I think it's really fun to sing to. And I think the first time I ever heard Gloria Estefan was like a Christmas song. And so now anytime I hear her, I think it's a Christmas song, even if it's like one of her other songs. And I love that because I love Christmas. So
those are excellent selections. Those Bruce Springsteen songs. He's going to be on Saturday Night Live soon.
I saw right? that.
Next on my weekend, birthday. Your birthday. Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Timothy Chalamet hosting.
Yeah.
My money's on him singing at least one Christmas song.
Yeah. He does them all the time, right?
Oh, does he?
On his live shows, every time it's around Christmas, he always sings.
Oh, well, it's in the bag.
Yeah.
Yes, I watched them on YouTube yesterday.
Oh, great.
He does do that.
I love it. See, Brayden's got his own special programs. David, what do you got?
I really do love the Drifters version of White Christmas. And a lot of it, I think, is also tied to the Home Alone scene. I think it's so funny.
What scene is that in?
That's when he's shaving, and he does the lip syncing to the, and then he puts on the aftershave and he like screams.
It's the iconic yell, yeah.
I love that version of it. I think it's so good. It's like almost incomprehensible how like much bass that voice is. It's like pure bass.
Yeah, and they re-recorded that song in 1989, and the bassist, I think, was a different bassist because they like those quartets from the early 50s, whenever a member dies, they just replace them, you know? So the new bassist cannot hit those same notes.
No, it's a bonkers thing. It almost sounds like it's not a voice. It's just a noise. Anyway.
All right.
I also really like... Elvis Presley's Blue Christmas. I like his version of Blue Christmas. I think it's really good.
Who originally sings that song?
I don't know, but I've heard it multiple. I heard it.
Katie's on it.
I'm on it.
We should have her on all the time. She can be our local.
I'll be our researcher.
Yeah.
We don't have the budget.
I like his version a lot. I think it's really fun. So those are my two. I mean, obviously, I probably have 1,000 more that I could switch and like swap out, but that's what I'm going with this round.
Okay. It was first recorded by Doy Odell, and it was written by Billy Hayes and J.W. Johnson.
I got nothing.
What year? Does it say a year?
The first recording was 1948.
So is that Bing Crosby?
Probably.
Wait, does he do Blue Christmas?
Oh, Blue Christmas. I thought we were talking about White Christmas. Never mind.
Although I feel like Bing Crosby sings everything for Christmas.
Oh, Bing. Are there any Bing Crosby albums on this list? Because if there are, we should take every opportunity to just excoriate him as a human being. Anyway, I'm a Sinatra fan. So I haven't talked about my favorite Christmas song yet, but I will tell you what song I hate more each year that I age. I think every year I hate John Lennon's Wars Over Christmas song a little more every year. And it may be because of the covers, which I find to be mostly subpar, or it could just be because of the extreme pretentiousness that is dripping off of that song. But coming from a person who, beat women and had some racist attitudes at times, I don't want to hear the sort of holier-than-thou spiel from someone like that. And I feel like it's on the radio all the time, which I also can't stand. But not even a category we're discussing, but for some reason that popped into my head. My favorite Christmas song is Ella Fitzgerald's version of Sleigh Ride. Mm. It's incredible. It's like, it's mostly just like it's a relatively mild, mid-tempo, swinging jazz standard. And at the very end, she just murders the last line. I listened to the entire song just for, 3 or 4 seconds of actual singing. And there's just a little stank on it, you know, it totally hijacks and disrupts the rhythm only for a moment, and then she's right back in time. And it speaks to her stellar excellence as a jazz vocalist in particular. That's my favorite song this season. But it shifts, you know, from time to time.
Can I just, like, bring up, like, I just want to talk about Christmas music in general and how it's such a, like, everyone gets in on it every year. Mm-hmm. And how we have, like, 50 versions of the same song, and yet we are still, like, wanting more versions and buying more versions. And it's been since, when do you think, like, the earliest recorded Christmas music we listened to? Probably the 40s.
1917.
That we're still just, like, listening to the same songs over and over again. Okay.
And the researchers.
And then it's like, I feel like it's research, but it's also fact checking. This is like her real life. Like, that's bullshit, David. I'm going to look it up. You're lying, David. Let me Google it.
Let me tell you why you're wrong.
I think it's such a fascinating thing. Like, oh, and you're almost expected to come out with a Christmas album at some point in your career.
We're starving for joy for 11 months a year, and then we get 1 month to enjoy stuff.
No, I know.
We started at Thanksgiving.
No, but that's the nice positive way to look at it, Braden. But is it just, can't you just see it as like, well, a cash grab that, like, you know, I don't have an album coming out, so let me just, this is an easy, quick, like, I don't even have to write the song. Someone will do the arrangement for me, and I'll put it out, and I'll sell some quick dollars on the holiday season.
It's the other form of a greatest hits album. Right? Like, it's an easy win. No one is going to yell at you about singing Silent Night, even though I really don't like that song either. Bigger fan of Holy Night.
Listen to the Phoebe Bridgers version of Silent Night.
It's so bad. It's so sad.
It's so sad. And it's like radio. It's like,
we listened to that yesterday.
Oh, that was
yeah,
it's not great, but it's so sad.
And then she's playing like Donald Trump news reports underneath it all. It's just like you really like re-ruined that song, Phoebe Bridgers.
She's really a better like Halloween song person.
Yeah. Yeah. I like her Merle Haggard version of If We Make It Through December. I do like that version, but
big fan of Phoebe Bridgers. Braden introduced me to her, and mm-hmm. it wasn't that song, but we did hear another Christmas song by Phoebe Bridgers. I think it was yesterday or the day before, and my first words
Christmas
were
or something. Does she do that one?
It was, and yeah, it was so sad.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm depressed immediately now. How can I have a Merry Christmas when you're singing this song with me?
Well, I mean, is this a good transition to one of the happiest, high energy albums of Christmas of all time?
What's that?
The
this one.
Ooh, difference.
Oh boy.
Absolutely.
Excitable, yes. Greatest of all time, probably not.
Oh, not greatest of all time.
So yeah, wait, what do we think? Do we need to stretch our legs? Do we need a break?
Yeah, let's take a break and listen to some more music.
Okay, we'll be right back.
You guys can all enjoy one of our favorite Christmas songs.
Oh, look at Katie on the outro. All right.
She's jockeying for a position.
You can be the guest host when I go on vacation. All right, we'll be right back. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. Welcome back, everybody. I think that was Santa Claus is Coming to Town. We think it was the Crystals, but who knows? It could just be Darlene Love, because who knows what the Crystals even sing, you know?
Oh, man, the message boards are lighting up again, Brandon, with your conspiracy theories of your one documentary you watched and half a Wikipedia.
There were
I watched it, too. I have some things to say. Just wait.
All right. You know, before we get into favorite tracks, you know what? Every time you say the message boards are lighting up, I just see Frasier and Roz from the TV show Frasier.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's all I got. Yeah. All right. Let's dive into favorite tracks, shall we? Who wants to go first? Bueller? Anybody? David, you go. What do you got?
Okay, fine. Mine is Sleigh Ride.
Really?
Sleigh Ride by the Ronettes. I think this is my favorite version of that song. I don't know. I just love the arrangement. I love all of the instruments. I love the piano in this one. And also just as like a kind of an overall, the horns of in every track are so good, which I guess like our brass instruments are kind of a hallmark of Christmas music, but
they're triumphant.
Yeah, they're used differently on this album. I really love it. So that's a fun song for me.
Okay. Katie?
I love the Christmas. Thoroughly love the one original. It's so good. It's so sad and so peppy at the same time. I love singing to it. It's great. All around song.
That's agreed. The only Braden. Choice, I feel like. I listen to the rest of the album so I can listen to that song. Because it just really stands out, you know? And
it does. It
does. She's actually like properly given credit to you for singing that song.
Yes, she is, Braden. Yes, she is. You know, at the end of the day, I'm a real simple man, and I tried to be more interesting. I considered Winter Wonderland. I did. I like the way that song goes on this album. But there's really no way of avoiding Baby Please Come Home. That song crushes just about everything else on the album, and it's not even close. I think those are excellent choices by Braden and Katie. And there are a myriad of moments that we can point to in terms of auditory ecstasy, but I'm going to go with this one. So take a listen to this, would you? So it's return to the call and response. You can't see my face anymore. I love it. So in the call and response, usually...
Thank you. You look so creepy.
So folks, we're all on Zooms right now, and I just see Braden's hand going down. I thought it was because I was yelling. But usually the lead vocalist begins a call and response. But here, in that clip you just heard, it's the backing vocalist, which is interesting. But that call and response, that back and forth, that builds and leads to that great release of Darling Love's vocal, which just blows the top off the end of the song. It just soars. And all this while there's a piano that's dancing in the background that seems to be counterbalancing every vocal choice that Darling Love makes. So I dig that song for all the reasons that you've all mentioned, and because there really isn't a better option.
I know. It is the best song. It's the not necessarily the one I want to listen to the most.
Oh, it is.
But I think what's really fun things about that track is that she wasn't even originally supposed to sing that song. It was supposed to be his future, Phil Spector's future wife was singing it, but didn't do it.
You know, why didn't they just put her on the track and say that she sang it like they did with every other thing?
I don't know.
Message boards.
But she like basically in the early 80s was a house cleaner. And then Darling Love, sorry, was a house cleaner and was just like that's how she was doing to get by to you know. And then she kept hearing her song on the radio and was like, what the
sounds
hell?
Like someone
and
then else David Letterman the documentary.
I didn't
Adam.
I just read.
Oh.
Yeah. The internet's free. But David Letterman was like listening to it. I think he saw it in the mid 80s, listened to it. And he's like, this is the greatest Christmas song of all time. Let's get her on the show. And then, if you haven't watched some of those YouTube, I'm sure we've maybe at all at this point watched all those live performances of her on the David Letterman show.
2 hours worth.
And how many different ways they're kind of doing the same song, which is really fun. And how many new, like with a choir or with, you know, different Santa gags and stuff. It's pretty fun that she was on there for 20, 30 years or something like that.
I think that we should treat our listeners to a bit of a clip of that maybe at the end of the show. We'll play them out with a little Paul Schaefer's band.
Sure.
Where are we now? We're at least favorites.
Ooh,
I love to hate. Brayden, you want to kick us off? What's your least favorite track?
By far, The Parade of the Wooden Soldiers.
It's awful.
It is the worst song.
It's frantic.
I was like skipping ahead to see if it got better.
It's
doesn't.
It's terrible. It's frantic. It's not fun. I am not excited about an attack of wooden soldiers, and it does not feel like Christmassy pleasant time. I imagine they're the evil toys from Toy Story.
Wow.
And I'm not a fan of all the wood clacking in the background. Brandon sometimes clacks at night because he gets like restless. He'll like clack his toes down, and that reminds me of that.
Can't edit that one out of the episode.
Yeah, you heard it first on the Late to the Party podcast.
That one's in.
And then here are some lyrics in case you aren't understanding what's wrong with this song. Bayonets flashing, music is crashing. As the wooden soldiers march, sabers a-clinking, soldiers a-winking at each little pretty maid.
Ooh.
I don't, like, it's like a soldier winking, like a toy soldier. What does its little, like, painted eyeball just like go away for a second? I don't know.
Wait, that's the part that creeps you out, is like the logistics of a wooden soldier winking.
Christmas and winking, I can't, it's, I don't know.
It's why he hates Michael Bublé.
Wait, what, isn't Santa like a winker? Doesn't Santa
no, no.
Santa's not famously
Santa,
a winker.
Santa
no.
may
no,
not
no.
wink.
He's got his little rosy cheeks and he's like
no, that's
that's a bad look.
That's a bad Santa.
Yeah.
That's a mall Santa who's down on his luck.
It's Oof. Like, the song is also my least fave, because the song is never good, no matter who. I mean, does anyone else sing the song? I imagine whoever it is.
I've never heard of it before.
There's nothing you can do with the song to make it good. It feels like they liked Nutcracker and were like, let's make words out of this, and then not stopping to be like, maybe the Nutcracker is really weird.
Or should
maybe we shouldn't be doing that. Fuck it. We need we need to give the Crystals another song on this album. So
another song, sure.
I also
Katie?
Kind of
they do, the Crystals have the worst.
Oh, that was my least favorite. Absolutely.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Brayden. What do you got?
I just feel like that they kind in the song they make the soldiers so violent, and that is weird to me. And then they say that they're winking at pretty maids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the original War on Christmas.
Oh, God. Oh,
one of these days, we're going to put out a special episode where we publish the Zoom recordings so that we can also see how self-satisfied David was by a joke that did not land.
It was a thinker. You had to
think
those
are
it.
Like some
it.
Different message nope. boards that are lighting up now.
True.
It's like the 4chan.
Well, I'm the odd person out here because I don't like that song either, but I can't get past the hatred I have for Bells of St. Mary. I hate that song so much.
Wow.
The lead singer sounds like he's Tarzan wailing through a foghorn. It's just terrible. I'm looking at all your faces and none of you disagree.
No.
It was
once
like
you
my
said
second
that,
least.
Once you made that Tarzan reference, I was trying to put a descriptor of what his voice sounds like, and you nailed it there.
It's a
like,
warble.
That is actually like should we take like 3 second like a little 3 second clip of that, just like oh, and put that in.
That was
yes.
Nice.
If we're looking to have fewer listeners, we should definitely do that at the top of the show, please. It's just that for 48 minutes. But here's what I'll say: I will say that I hated that song. And I'll say that the drummer, and I don't know if it's Hal Blaine or Earl Palmer, but the drummer saves that song. So just as the song is climaxing, the drummer starts breaking down and I can't even handle it. I stopped listening to the lyrics just so that I can appreciate the music. So if you listen to this. There's just like there's this rhythmic assault that is driving us toward the end, and it gives the vocals, which are terrible, an extra little lift. So here's another plug for the greatness of the Wrecking Crew, and to say that song's still shit, but I like that part. David, what do you got?
I made a note of the drums too on that.
Yeah, you did.
And I hated that it faded out while it started. I'm like, ooh, this is getting interesting, and then it just fades yes. out and it ends.
Yeah, justice is getting good. Just as it starts to save itself, it's over. But what are you going to do? That was a pretty tight segment we just had there. We should have Katie and Creighton on more often. What would you all describe as the best time to listen to this? Or, as David suggested earlier, maybe your best Christmas activity?
Well, who's going for it? We didn't establish an order, so I think...
We should have done that beforehand. Katie, you're the default de facto first.
When should you listen to it?
Yeah. Or not.
I mean, honestly, I think you should just pick a few songs and put them in your playlist instead of listening to the whole album. That would be my first thing. Otherwise, this very much feels like a, you know, like driving through one of those, like, not a neighborhood of Christmas lights, but those places that like go over the top with Christmas lights, like everything is covered in Christmas lights kind of activities in the car then, if you're going to listen to the whole album.
Okay.
Right. Kind of matches up with the intensity, I feel like.
What say you, Braden Tobin?
I think maybe when you're only half paying attention and then you're startled to awareness as soon as you hear Baby Please Come Home and that sweet, sweet sax solo.
Such a good sax solo.
But like the music itself, I feel like is good and it's like, it's peppy and there's like some good like ambient noise in the background going on. And so I like the album for that, but if I really listen to the songs, I end up getting annoyed at most of them.
Mm.
So that's my answer.
That's an early hot take.
Oh, sorry.
That's I skipped.
No, I love it. We make that's all these rules and then break them.
Yeah, I know. That's Jay Migliori on the saxophone, by the way. He crushes it throughout this entire
album. I thought that it was Bruce Kapler.
Oh, where's our background researcher? Wait, are you checking Twitter over there, Katie?
Is it Stephen Douglas?
Here's the beauty of the Wrecking Crew. You'll never know. That's not true. Katie will probably find it. Wow.
Oh, okay. Best time to listen. I do agree that the playlist. I'm much more of a Christmas playlist kind of person because I grew up listening to all Christmas music on the radio. I never owned an album. My family never owned an album. It was just, why would you do that if you just put it on the radio and it's always Christmas all the time? I really like that. And I feel like the song that stood out as that Bruce Springsteen, Santa's Coming to Town was, I loved when I heard live music on the radio. It just has this different feeling. I don't know.
It does.
Anyway. But I said during it has to be a party. It's just too much energy for anything else. You can't, like, it's not like a decorate the Christmas tree. It's not like a baking cookies. It's not just a nice walk through winter wonderland. Nice it is walk. Just like you have in the background. And I think there's no lull. It is an intense the whole time. So I said a party of some kind.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of you in terms of distraction. This is the first time I've sat down and listened to it closely or straight through or with a sense of attention. Having done that, I don't feel the need to listen to it that way ever again. It's going to be selected tracks and I'm going to need to be busy. I think Braden, we were listening a couple of days ago and we were playing Farkle or Scrabble or something. So having it on the background and then being pleasantly brought back to awareness, as Braden says, that's a nice way of experiencing the Christmas feel, because again, it's the wall of sound, right? It's giving you that impression of a good song, even if the lyrics or the content doesn't hold up. So in this sense, Phil Spector's experiment is a success because that's what he wanted.
But that's the genius behind The Wall of Sound, is that it doesn't have to be, it's just automatically a hit maker.
Right, it tricks you into thinking you're hearing a good song sometimes.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
So I don't want to dive deeper into A Christmas Baby Please Come Home because I don't want to know what's beneath the surface.
Bruce Kapler was amazing. In Paul Schaefer's band. So it actually, he wasn't on the album, I don't think. So David, you were right.
So Bruce Kapler is the person playing that solo when she performs on David Letterman's show.
He's dressed up as Santa.
There are still two saxophonists listed, though, for her version of the song.
So maybe it's both of them. Yeah. But who does the solo? Who knows?
It's like Fruit by the Foot. What will they come up with next?
Yeah.
So here's perhaps the most contentious category of this section. Who's the MVP of this album?
The auto MVP.
Sorry, David, sorry.
Yes.
Trademark pending. I would say, Katie, go first.
I found that really hard. I really like all their percussion. So the percussionists. Anyone who is playing those sleigh bells in any song always make me pretty happy. I don't know who's responsible for those sleigh bells. I assume it's the one of the percussionists, and there were several.
Of the show.
Yes. Yeah, and there were three, so that would be my MVP.
Braden, MVP?
Darlene Love.
There's an implied
there. And it's there, other than the obvious, yes, as we've discussed throughout the entire show. But now is when I was going to bring up the fact that she was cleaning houses when her song came on, and she decided to spark up her career again. And that's just so sad to me. The fact that Phil Spector just like totally took advantage of her, milked her for all of her talent and everything that she had to give the world, and then she was cleaning houses in 1990. Are you fucking kidding me? It was originally going to be the saxophone player, but like, fuck that guy. He's fine. I'm sure he has jobs. So, yeah. That's got me all fucked up.
He took at least 15 years of her recording.
And then she signed a contract with another music whatever producer, and they just handed it back over to Phil Spector.
Yeah, they sold it back to Phil Spector.
And it's just
so she thought she got out.
I don't know. It's exposing all of the things that we already know about the shitty music industry.
Who is it? It was Bruce Springsteen, to Braden's point, who was talking about how much vocalists, especially in the 50s and 60s, were reliant on songwriters and producers and other musicians. And Darlene Love thought that she was protected by Phil Spector because he was so successful. And for some reason, he just kept fucking her. Not some reason, she's an easy target. He kept fucking her over. And he took so much time and money, like more importantly, money,
so much money
from her. Yeah, that's terrible.
And the
that's
fact a great that MVP. It's a black woman, are you fucking kidding me?
Right. When other vocalists who were so much less talented that we've talked about on this show constantly were getting all the credit and royalties for those performances. It's disgusting. Yeah. Also, we learned that at age 70, Darlene Love sounds just as good as anybody else could ever sound. My God,
yeah,
that has pipes.
Better than ever, maybe.
So good. We still have the rental, so if you want to watch it, it was only $3.99 on, was it Fandango? I think we rented it. My MVP is surprising to no one. I'm going with the Wrecking Crew, and how could you not go with the Wrecking Crew? First of all, I can cheat because they're like 20 musicians. But they back five different groups. They sound like five different bands, and they turn in definitive versions of some of these songs, and they do it for hourly wage, by the way. They're not getting paid these massive recording contracts. They're working, they're hourly workers. So people like Hal Blaine and Ray Pullman, who was the bassist for the Wrecking Crew before Carole Kaye takes over, and Earl Palmer. And how do we get this far into the episode without talking about Leon Russell? I have no idea. Yeah. But all those people were playing on these albums, on this album, and they got paid by the hour. David, you have something to say about Leon Russell.
Well, he was my MVP. I think.
Oh, there it is.
I was going to say Jack Nietzsche because the arrangements and making these old standards sound full of life and interesting and new. But Leon Russell's piano can be heard, you know, very clearly in every track. And it's either driving the energy. It's like a bum, 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 bum. Like it's really, really like present. Or then if you even listen carefully on a... wrote down some tracks. I can't find it. Anyway, where it's just like, he's just like, it sounds like it's pure joy on the piano during these Christmas songs. And he's awesome. And I think that he needs also to be recognized because I think Brian Wilson is a name that people know. And he was dicking around on the piano in the studio. And people are like, oh, Brian Wilson played piano one, even though apparently he wasn't very good. And,
well, I don't think people know who Leon Russell is, though, either, right? Like, he's the pianist for the Wrecking Crew. He starts as a session musician, but he also becomes the musical director for Joe Cocker's band, Joe Cocker and the Mad Men. And he wrote the song, A Song for You, which has been recorded by everybody. And yeah. Elton John loves him so much that Leon Russell, he basically goes unheard of for decades. He gets sick and he's got an alcohol abuse problem, all those things. But 2010s, somewhere around there, Elton John finds him because he adored him so much in the 70s. And he records an album with him just to get Leon Russell out of debt, right? So that's the other side of the Wrecking Crew thing, right? Once they're done, they get cast off and nobody cares about them anymore. But extremely important to American music, Leon Russell.
I mean, he's got 6 gold records, 2 Grammy awards. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's in the Songwriter Hall of Fame. I mean, he worked with everybody, Dylan, right. Sinatra, Stones, everybody. But again, just like we started on our very first, one of our earliest episodes, our Harry Nilsson episode, who was using the Wrecking Crew? Bobby Keys, right? It's just like another one of these guys that we need to be heard.
And both are now dead, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So let's end the segment there, shall we? Just on Christmas joy with the death of Leon Russell and Bobby Keys.
Beautiful.
Folks, we'll be right back.
Christmas past. Yeah. Welcome back, folks. That was the ridiculous song "Marshmallow," A Marshmallow World, which is a song that I didn't know existed until about 2 weeks ago when Katie is also, I don't know if, I mean, you don't know because I haven't told anybody, but she is like a savant jukebox like mind. Like she sings never the same song twice, like ever. Like I'm pretty sure, I wish I just wrote down every song she's, every day is a different song. That you've you don't know where it comes from, and
I don't know what it's called. I couldn't tell you who sings it.
She's singing. She's like, "What's that song?" I don't know. And then we spend like 40 minutes trying to find it on Apple Music or something. But one day she's singing "A Marshmallow World" like 2 weeks ago, and I was like, "That's not a song." It was because like the lyrics are, "It's a marshmallow world in the winter when the snow comes to cover the ground. It's time for play. It's a whipped cream day. I'll wait the whole year round." And it's like, and the sun is red.
I was
like,
not seeing those lyrics. I was singing, "It's a marshmallow world." No, and then, the rest of it.
Are you actually singing, "I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie
sun,
world"?
And the sun is red like a pumpkin head. So it's shining so your nose won't freeze. Like, this is dumb lyrics. These are dumb lyrics.
Live.
That was sad. Show. That was a sad parade.
Darlene Love sang that at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade this year.
That's good.
By that I mean
you never take her voice again.
It, but at least they were, it was her own voice.
It's a silly song, and I know that like Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra sing it too. It's even weirder. Just why are those two singing? That's even, I don't know, it's a silly song that has nothing to do with Christmas.
Not at all. Hot takes, everybody. Hot takes. Katie Schaefer.
All right, my hot take is more about Christmas music in general. I hate all versions of Frosty the Snowman. Hate every single one of them.
Even there's one on this album.
Yeah, right? Like it wasn't my least favorite because the other one is so terrible. But yeah, don't like it. Don't like the song. Don't like the lyrics. Mm-mm.
I feel like that song goes on too long.
Like maybe it could have. It's a long story.
Wrap it up.
Just don't like it.
David, any hot takes from you?
Well, Frosty the Snowman is a sad song. It's just, it's sad. It's a friend you have, like your best friend ever, and then he melts? That's messed up. The hot takes are that so many Christmas songs are really, like, you don't want to look into the lyrics of any of these songs. Mm-hmm. They're either super ridiculous, super trite, utterly depressing, or kind of traumatic. I saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. Marshmallow World is ridiculous.
Hold on, Christmas, that song is supposed to be sweet.
Supposed to be versus reality. Christmas Baby,
moving on.
Please Come Home is so, it's like the saddest song.
True.
But yet it sang so joyously, like almost ironically, that I don't know. That's my hottest take about Christmas music.
Okay. David, that was the perfect transition. you mentioned that you don't want to look too deeply into the lyrics, right? So the the quote from Phil Spector that I misquoted earlier was, if the material wasn't the greatest, the sound would carry the record. So speaking directly to what you just said, if we know the song sucks or isn't up to its highest quality, we're going to make it sound really good. So I find that relevant to this album and to the album before this, Pet Sounds, by the way, which we talked about the lyrics just being complete nonsense. But if you listen too many times in a row to this album, you start to realize it's not very good. That's my hot take. It is not a very good album. If you listen too many times, the album starts to sound thin, and not because of the instrumentation or even the vocal performances, but just because the quality of some of the songs themselves is not really up to snuff, Marshmallows included. It's really the instruments and the vocals that trick you, as I said before, into thinking the songs are better than what they are. And so my hot take is, I went in thinking, oh yeah, this album is brilliant, it's amazing. And that's true of the instrumentation, but not necessarily the songs. So that's my hot take. This album sucks. So that's what I got. Should we listen, purchase, or pass? And if you say listen or purchase, should we own it on vinyl? We go back to you, Ms. Schaefer.
Should listen, for sure. I do not think you need to own it on vinyl. I'm not sure you need to buy it. You just listen to that on Apple Music. You don't need to pay for it.
Okay.
I guess you have to have an. You should edit all of this out. This doesn't make any sense.
Keeping every minute.
Like, how does buying music work in 2020? Like,
it doesn't. We don't.
Apparently, I don't know how that works anymore. Yeah, I mean, listen to it. Buy it if you want to. Don't buy it on vinyl. Wrap it up there.
Expert advice from Katie. Yeah, yeah. Braden, listen, purchase, or pass?
I think listen to it. Yeah. I don't think you should purchase it.
You could see his face right now, folks. He is not pleased. Purchase it.
What you should do is go on to YouTube and watch every Darlene Love performance of Christmas on the David Letterman show.
And then Venmo her $10.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I don't think she needs it anymore. But just do that.
Definitely. David, what do you think?
Well, I think that, what was I going to say? Don't pass, listen. And I wouldn't pay money for it. I think if this was a concert, because in our earliest days of our friendship, Brandon and Braden, you took us to see some live Christmas performances.
Oh yeah,
And it's not happening this year, right?
No.
But it was the Christmas sing along, and it's such a wonderful part of the year. I love listening to Christmas music, but going to live performances is amazing. And if this album, someone said, "Hey, this is going to be a live performance of this album," I would pay good money to go see this whole performance live. I think that's what I do. I want to own it? No, but I would go experience it. I think that would be really fun.
We should recommend this to our Yuletide friends.
Not
do
like
a full album for cover of A Christmas Gift for You. I think she'd be into that, actually.
Can you recreate the Wall of Sound in person?
No.
Well, no. You'd need a lot more musicians and space.
No.
So you'd just be disappointed at that live performance.
Probably.
Which is what they talk about if you watch you probably watched that clip of the first David Letterman, Darlene Love performance. It's just like her, a guitarist, a bassist, and a drummer. And they said that they tweaked it as best they possibly could to recreate that Wall of Sound. And then it's also got what's his face on the keys. It still sounds pretty darn good. It looks
it's just not
incredible.
Big enough.
No. Yeah.
I'm going to pass on this one.
Whoa.
Yeah. As an album, I mean, I guess I'm cheating is what I'm doing. I'm going to pass on it as an album. I'm going to say, you know, you can listen to selected tracks or turn on 102.5 at 2:00 in the afternoon, and you'll probably hear most of the songs you want to hear from this album anyway. But as an album, I think that you can pass on it. You don't need to listen to it all the way through. That's my redefining of pass, by the way. You don't need to listen to the entire thing.
This is for anyone. Do you think that this album, like in 40 years, will disappear from all the best of lists?
No, I think it'll actually be on more lists because the
really
away from it, the more people will. Yeah, nostalgia will kick in even more, I think.
Well, I feel like all those people that have.
What do you
think? I feel like all the people that have nostalgia for it will be dead by then. And then, like, you know what I mean? Like, that grew up with it in the 60s and or were adults in the 60s and, like, listened to this and heard it. And then for the ones voting on the list for the 2003 Rolling Stone thing.
Yeah, I imagine we'll have another wave of pretension where people will pull back or kick back to that era and find it fondly because it's old. That's what I see happening.
Well, not to mention it's all songs that are familiar. So
it, right.
You know, it's not like learning an original Christmas song you hadn't heard before. So like you go and listen to lots of versions of songs just because of the novelty of hearing someone else do it.
Right. You just don't have to listen to the Bells of St. Mary, thank God.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be on lists.
Really?
In the future. I mean, most of the songs are kind of obsolete. It's just like, how many of these songs had we never heard of and nobody else does versions of them? And that's like where Christmas music is going, as David was talking about before. Nobody's going to cover the Toy Soldier song or Marshmallow World or I don't know.
What dark times these are.
I feel like Katy Perry would cover a Marshmallow World if she hasn't already. I feel like that's like...
It's because she has...
What?
She has no taste. I was going to say no talent, but I don't know if that's actually true. She certainly has terrible taste. That's all
Brandon's, Brandon's last hot take.
Yeah, Katy Perry sucks. There's a hot take for you. It's like lukewarm take because everybody knows that. Anyway, folks, thank you for joining us on this particularly dark episode of Late to the Party. David, where do they find us? How do they find us?
Well, we are on Instagram, fairly lively, at Late to the Party 1989. You know, we post infrequently, but also in great barrages of listings of songs and random information you don't need to know. But also, you can also find us on the, I don't know, you can email us at latetotheparty1989@gmail.com, which, you know, it's a thing we own, but no one emails us. So there's that. Or you can leave us a voicemail, which we have a few voicemails.
We're going to play at some point.
Three different, completely different humans have called and left voicemails about their favorite Christmas songs. So yeah, you can find that on Anchor. The link's on the Instagram bio or on our podcast main page. You can listen to us wherever podcasts are
available.
I was going to say sold, but that's not right.
We don't buy things anymore. Remember, we just had a segment about this.
That's true.
It's perhaps disingenuous to say that we have two special episodes in a row, but I guess that is actually accurate because our next episode will be focusing on the very first album on this list, Frank Sinatra's In the Wee Hours of the Morning. Wee Small Hours of the Morning? Is that what it's called?
Wee Small Hours.
David's got it on vinyl. He's listened to it before.
1955, Frank Sinatra, In the Wee Small Hours, considered, I guess, the first quote-unquote album. That's why it's number one, not because it's the best, but because it's the first.
Is it first album or first concept album?
Well, is it even a concept album? Well, more on that later, I suppose. Yes.
Craig and Katie are stepping away. We might also bring another relief pitcher for that particular episode. We'll have to see if his schedule allows.
Yeah, so, a little tease there.
A little tease.
Well, thank you to our special guests.
Thanks, Braden and Katie.
Sharing your wonderful thoughts on Christmas and
folks, you got to say thank you or you're welcome. We can't see your thumbs
up. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
They both just go thumbs up. I love it.
I need a nap.
Well, thanks again, friends. We'll see you all later at Late to the Party. Have a great holiday season.
Happy holidays.
Traditions that I truly, truly look forward to. One, of course, is dressing up my kitty like Santa. And the other is a visit from our next guest. And next month, she appears at the Rainbow and Stars right here in New York City. Do me a favor, please welcome Darlene Love.